existence of a zero lot alignment of any part of a neighbour's property can also impact you. What I mean by zero lot alignment is where they have been allowed to build right up to their property boundary without the usual boundary setback of half a metre to 2 metres. See the example below. For example, if the neighbour's lock-up garage has been approved and built with a zero setback, and so it is built right up to the boundary line, then it is unlikely that you will get approval to do the same on your property along the same boundary. Instead, if you want to build your garage up to the boundary line, you will have to have your garage on the opposite boundary and apply to council for the setback relaxation. Unless, of course, your other neighbour has already built on that boundary, in which case you'll not be able to do either option. Another consideration in some councils and in some zones is the development of duplexes. Some regulations state that you cannot develop a duplex if there is already another duplex built within a certain distance of your site. In fact, the other duplex doesn't even have to be built yet. It may just need to have been given council approval. Clearly, if you are unaware of this council regulation or did not research the other approvals around you, or even applications lodged with council but not yet approved, this could significantly impact on what you could do on your site. From a positive perspective, though, there are also situations where having a development next door to you could actually work in your favour, particularly if you plan to develop your site. This situation would occur when maybe your site is only approved as a maximum of 2 stories, but because there are older units next to you built to 3 or 4 stories, then maybe there is justification for you to apply to council for a height relaxation for your project, particularly on that side of the site. This alone could increase the density of units you are able to develop, or the size of the units, or even the views achieved from those units. This situation can also be beneficial from a residential perspective. For example, if most of the street has older houses built closer to the front boundary, then maybe you could get a relaxation from council to do the same. Or maybe if there are a couple of older houses in your street built to 3 stories, then you could use these as a precedent to request that you too could build to 3 stories, when normally 2 stories would be the maximum. Trees. The presence of trees on the site, at the front of the site, and neighbouring the site may have numerous potential impacts. Firstly, trees obviously have roots, and the larger the tree or the more vigorous its growth habit, potentially the more invasive the root system. And this does not have to be a tree in your property. It may be a tree some distance away in the neighbour's property. Species like bamboo and the figs can have very vigorous root systems. The problem with this is that the roots can cause damage to not only underground pipework like water and sewer pipes, but they can also damage footings, crack and lift driveways, buckle fences and the like. Clearly, greater maintenance can be associated with having trees in and around a property. Trees also drop sap, foliage, fronds and limbs, and this can cause property damage and also be a hazard to people. If there are going to be tenants in the property, you need to be mindful of this potential hazard, as you may be held accountable if any injury occurs and you did not manage the tree appropriately. The falling debris can also build up in the roof gutters, causing them to block, resulting in water damage inside the property. If you intend to develop the property, the presence of trees can have a significant impact depending on the maturity of the tree. Some councils will not allow you to cut down well-established trees, and so obviously this can affect your capacity to develop the site, particularly if the tree is right in the middle. Even if you can remove the tree, the cost can be considerable, particularly if it is large. The roots may need to be grubbed out, and this can leave a void underground that may have an impact if you plan to build over the top. Even retaining trees on your site or having significant trees on a neighbour's property can impact on the wetting and drying profile of the soil, and this has to be accommodated in the engineer's design of the footings and slab. Both may need to be thickened to accommodate this effect, and this will again come at a cost. Trees at the front of your property and on the council frontage can also impact on the location of the access driveway, again impacting on your potential to develop the site. As trees grow, they can also affect a view, and you need to be very mindful of this, particularly if you are paying a premium for the view. If the trees are beyond your boundary and they grow up to block your view in the future, you may have no capacity to do anything about it. Body corporate review. When you are considering a property that is strata titled and part of a body corporate, it is imperative that you review the body corporate documents. This includes the body corp bylaws, the meeting minutes, annual statements, accounts, and budgets. This research is important because you become a part of the body corporate as soon as you buy a property in the complex. The bylaws will control what can and can't be done as a tenant or a resident. The accounts will reflect the amount of funds in the administration account, the regular costs that are being incurred, and the amount of money in the sinking fund that has been set aside for future maintenance. Clearly, not enough money in the sinking fund is an issue if maintenance is required in the near future. This is because the owners can be requested to pay a special contribution to attend to these works, and depending on the issues, this could be a significant amount of money. The minutes will detail the history of the building, maintenance, and structural issues, disputes between owners, and general unease amongst the community. Clearly, you want to know this information before you potentially buy into such an establishment. Height restrictions. All councils will have height restrictions that dictate the maximum height or number of stories that a single dwelling and new developments can attain. There's an example below. Understanding this is important if you intend to do building works or development on a site. It is also worth noting, though, that relaxations may be considered if there is already a precedent in your street for taller buildings. This is not a given, however, and you need to discuss this with council early on to gauge their willingness before making decisions on this basis. If the zoning allows for more than two stories and you are considering building higher, it is essential that you do your research on construction costs, because they increase significantly above two stories. You also need to check the building regulations in your state, because in some locations like Queensland, a different class building licence is required depending on the height of the building. For example, a low-rise builder's licence can only build to a maximum of two stories, a medium-rise licence up to a maximum of three stories, and an open builder's licence above three stories. The total floor area and class of building being constructed can also affect the required licence class of the builder. Your target market also needs to be considered. For example, if you are developing townhouses, does the target market want the extra flight of stairs that come with a three-storey townhouse? Or is the cost of a lift justified? Just because you can go higher doesn't necessarily mean you should. Cyclone rating requirements. Cyclones affect Northern Territory, Queensland and Western Australia. The construction of buildings in cyclone-affected areas is at a higher specification than in non-cyclone areas due to the destructive forces, wind and pressure of a cyclone, and the significant potential damage to property and human life. Knowing that you are in a cyclone-rated area and factoring this into your build cost is essential because it does have a significant impact, with the property having to be built to a much higher wind load rating. If you are considering doing a structural renovation, an extension, or even relocating or moving a dwelling in these areas, this additional compliance requirement needs to be factored in to ensure your costs do not blow out. Main roads. The class of road that a property borders can have a major effect from a number of perspectives, and so researching this upfront is very important. Below are some of the potential impacts. Firstly, you need to understand the class of the road or street, as this will affect who controls it. For example, small feeder streets may be managed by the local council, whereas main roads may be managed by the main roads department in your state, while the highways are typically managed federally. Don't be surprised, though, if even the same street differs along its length in the class and management authority. This is important because it will affect where and what you research and who may impose regulations, and who may be a referral agency that could have input into a development approval for the site, for example, state and federal agencies. The more resourced councils will have online mapping that shows the hierarchy of roads in the shire. There's an example below. The current status and nature of a road or street is important because it can significantly affect what you can do within its vicinity. This might be as simple as whether you can put a skip bin out the front while doing a renovation. Definitely, if you plan to develop the site in any way and increase the intensity of people accessing the property from the road, then the current and future characteristics of the road are critical. The visibility up and down the street from your property will have an important effect. For example, if you are on a corner or approaching the crest of a hill, or if there is infrastructure nearby and the road visibility from your side is restricted, this can affect your ability to develop the site. The volume of traffic and the capacity to turn into your property can also have an impact and may prevent, for example, a right turn entry or exit, or may require you to install a lay-by lane or traffic lights, etc., which all come at a cost. Your capacity to park roadside out the front of your property is also a consideration, as it can affect the number of visitor parks that need to be provided for on site. Your proximity to major infrastructure or an event centre can also impact because of the overflow of vehicle parking that may result, for example, near schools, hospitals, entertainment and sports grounds and stadiums, and even local markets. Even the capacity to leave rubbish bins on the road verge for collection is impacted by the size of the road and the existence of a parking lane. Let's take an example of where you are on a main road and there is no on-street parking allowed, but you intend to develop the site and increase the number of dwellings, and hence number of rubbish bins that need to be emptied. This situation could mean that there is no capacity for a rubbish truck to pull over to empty the bins without backing up the traffic. In this instance, therefore, you may be required to design your development to take on-site rubbish collection, and hence a rubbish truck, accessing and turning on-site. This alone takes up a huge amount of room and could significantly affect the layout and your capacity to develop the site. Understanding the current status of your street is critical, but so too is researching any future plans. For example, is there a resumption order in place because the road will be widened in the future? This may come up in a main road search by your solicitor on purchase, but not necessarily, hence why you also have to do your own research. For example, the council may have a planning rule, only known by council and consultant town planners familiar with the local area, that for particularly narrow streets, council may impose a condition of development that you cannot build any permanent structures within a certain distance of your boundary because council intend to widen the street at some point in the future. This will therefore affect things like the positioning of the main water meter, drainage pits, retaining walls, manholes, in addition to the actual building, to name a few. Maybe your individual property may have been specifically named in historic council reports as an option or alternative site for more significant resumption, but it has not been finalised. This could make a chunk of your land unable to be developed and hence alter significantly what you could do with it in the future. Searching council records and meeting minutes and doing general internet searches on your road is highly recommended. Besides actual resumption plans, just changes in the intention for your street and surrounding streets can have a significant effect on the intensity of traffic passing your property and the general flow of traffic. For example, what if your currently quiet street was proposed to become a higher order street or even a main road? Or what if your no-through road became a through road? What about if changes to the road network a distance away turned your street now into a preferred route for cars and therefore turned it into a major thoroughfare? Or what if a new development was approved for your street, for example a preschool, and therefore the traffic usage could increase significantly? Maybe a local market is planned to start up nearby and parking in your street is likely to become a major issue during market hours. Maybe the bus routes are altered and your street is now frequented by buses, or maybe a bus stop is added. These may be viewed as negative consequences, but obviously the alternative is also possible, and your currently busy street or road may be downgraded and become less frequented, or maybe the local market moves or the preschool closes. Maybe road calming devices like steep speed bumps or a roundabout are planned to be installed, and they will reduce the speed and flow of the traffic. All these have an impact because they affect the volume and flow of traffic, the ease with which you can access your property, the traffic noise, the parking, and even your proximity to public transport. And these all affect the potential value and the saleability and rentability of your property. Noise pollution. Noise can be a major environmental pollution, whether it comes from a road, railway, airport, flight path, industrial noise, or even the less obvious, like the sound of a helicopter landing on a helipad on top of a hospital building, or a colony of resident bats or parrots that only squawk at night. Perhaps it may not be constant, but rather infrequent and irregular. You need to research what it is around you that may result in noise pollution. Speaking with the neighbours is again highly recommended, as they will generally tell you what goes on in the area. Also, being aware of future changes that may increase or decrease the noise pollution of your site is important. For example, you may be on a main road or back onto a railway line, and an acoustic fence is planned to be installed in the near future by the authorities. Clearly, this would significantly reduce both the noise and visual pollution experienced on your site, hence possibly increasing its value and appeal. Alternatively, if you intend to develop a site that is affected by noise, you are likely to have to engage a specialist consultant to quantify the effect and give the site a noise rating, or maybe several noise ratings if the exposure changes over the site. An acoustic engineer can do this, or possibly a traffic engineer. Or as part of the approval process, a referral agency like Main Roads may be required to access the site. The intensity of the development may be reduced, or conditions may be imposed in the development approval. For example, you may be required to erect, at your own expense, an acoustic fence on the boundary, or to design and construct any habitable buildings according to the noise rating. There are numerous acoustically rated materials that can be used to insulate against noise, including different exterior cladding, internal linings, insulation materials, and window and door glazing. They all, however, come at a cost and can substantially affect the cost of developing that particular site. Air pollution. While we are talking pollution, air pollution is another aspect that needs to be part of your due diligence, including chemical, particle, and odour. Examples are things like pollution plumes from industry, maybe from a smelter, or a commercial incinerator, or even congested main roads. There is also the unfavourable odour from activities like a brewery, sugar mill, abattoir, or even a colony of bats. Particle or dust pollution is also a factor, for example from a mining activity, quarry, or haulage on unsealed road. In all of these cases, the prevailing wind direction relative to your site is very relevant and will affect the extent of the pollution your site is exposed to. Do not think that you need to be close to the pollution source either, because wind blows and pollution can travel a long distance, and so you may not even be aware that there is industry in the area that may cause pollution that affects your property. Let's call on the neighbours once again, and even the local information centre and property managers in the area can be useful for gathering this type of information. The Bureau of Meteorology will have information on prevailing winds for your area to inform your research. Underground mining and earthworks, subsidence. Having touched on mining in the section above from a pollution perspective, there is also another potentially significant impact from the activity, and in fact from any activity that involves underground excavation, like digging a tunnel under the centre of a city. Ground subsidence is where the ground surface drops and can result in anything from a depression in the ground surface through to a major sinkhole. Clearly, being aware of any current and historic activities like this in the vicinity of your site is essential. A solicitor's search will identify registered subsidence sites. However, you should also do your own local research and internet search to pick up potential sources. For example, a mine proposed for your area, or a proposed road tunnel, or even the noise and vibration from these works can potentially have an impact. Any movement in the earth's surface can adversely affect property. Hence, existing structures need to be appropriately assessed and proposed structures need to be appropriately designed and built. Having followed the required regulations during construction, however, people's perceptions may be adversely affected by the potential for subsidence in an area. Despite the fact that compensation may be available, this could negatively affect the value, saleability, and rentability of the property and is therefore something you need to be aware of. Earthquake, tsunami, sea level rise. In Australia, earthquakes and tsunamis are not commonplace, but for completeness, I just wanted to remind you that they are potential factors to include in your due diligence, particularly if you are considering property overseas. Sea level rise, however, is something that could impact low-lying areas of Australia in the near future. Being aware of it, researching it, and factoring it into your decision-making is therefore recommended the closer to the coast you are considering. Crime rate. The crime rate of an area can have a huge effect on people's desire to live there and therefore needs to be a part of your due diligence. Keep in mind, though, that the crime may not be across a whole suburb. It may be limited to a street level or even an individual property level. And if you happen to buy the property next door, this can have a significant impact on the success of your project. Talking to multiple people in the street, the local shop owners, even the local police, are worthwhile actions to ensure you have done your due diligence in this regard. Insurance. Insurance is an essential component in property and something that needs to be part of your due diligence. The property and the people you work with need to be properly insured. For example, vacant land should have public indemnity insurance cover to protect any injury caused to a third party accessing the site, for example, the postman out the front, or a contractor like a soil tester or surveyor traversing the land. If there is anything built on the site, it should be insured from a building perspective and also from a public liability perspective, and contents should be insured. If you have tenants, landlord insurance is also advisable to cover potential property damage or loss of rent. If you are doing work to the property, you need to ensure that the tradespeople, builder, consultants and professionals working on it have the correct insurances in place. For example, professional and public indemnity insurance and work cover. Also, the work itself needs to be covered by contract works insurance. Any specialist works like house relocation may also require specialist insurance, as might the presence of tenants if they reside on the property while works are underway. You should request a copy of these insurances from the relevant parties like your engineer, builder, tradies, etc. Double check that the insurance will remain valid for the duration of your project and keep a copy for your record. Licences and compliance. Another aspect of your due diligence when undertaking works on a property is that everyone is appropriately licensed for the work they are undertaking, that they have the necessary qualifications and trade tickets, and that current workplace health and safety measures are in place and being adhered to. You should also request a copy of their licences, qualifications, certificates, and again ensure that they are current and will remain valid for the duration of your project. You also need to ensure that you are qualified to do the works that you intend to undertake. For example, if you are doing a renovation on your own property and you are unqualified, then clearly you cannot do plumbing, electrical or building work that is required to be undertaken by a qualified tradesperson or builder. Even works that affect the fire protection aspects of a property, like the fire separation walls or fire collars in a unit, apartment or townhouse, need to be undertaken by a qualified person. Large-scale demolition works and asbestos removal also need to be done by qualified people. The situation also changes once you are undertaking renovation works for someone else or on someone else's property. This is because the regulations change, and therefore you need to understand the licensing restrictions on this in your particular state. For example, in Queensland, undertaking a major kitchen, bathroom or laundry renovation for someone else requires you to have a license class known as a builder restricted to kitchen, bathroom and laundry. If you intend to be an owner builder, you also need to understand the restrictions and regulations in your state because they differ between states. For example, in most states, there is a restriction on the number of properties you can construct as an owner builder over a given period of time. In Victoria, you can only build one house every 3 years and you must intend to live in it on completion. Also, if you go to sell it within 6.5 years of construction completion, there are requirements that you must first fulfil. There are also restrictions on what renovation work you can do and what you can build. For example, in Queensland, you can only build a single dwelling and therefore no duplexes, multi-units, commercial or industrial construction projects.